First, though, we'll have a look at what's been making news this week with Tony Allen. And Tony, another blow, I suppose you could call it, to the potential for Northern Australia to be a food bowl.
Yes, a bit more mud in the Northern food bowl, courtesy of a report by the ANZ Bank's research unit. Now, it was looking at the ability of Northern Australia to grow crops to feed the Asian market. It did find good prospects for beef, which is already happening in the north. It's found that strong beef and live cattle prices meant investments in beef production in Northern Australia were likely to deliver returns of 7 to 14%. But ANZ economist Paul Dean says that in contrast, to try and grow crops in the north is unlikely to return a profit in the short term.
Grains and oilseed prices, so corn and soybeans, are actually at a 4 or 5 year low, so they've come right off their highs from 2011. If we incorporate that into, you know, our production model and look at the economics of producing those crops up north, we actually get negative financial returns at the moment.
We've heard in the last couple of weeks that the likelihood of an El Niño, which is warmer and drier, has increased recently. What about the seasonal outlook the next few months?
Well, the Bureau this week released its tips for the next 3 months, and they're not a surprise. It says the temperatures will be higher, rainfall will be less than normal in much of Australia, certainly northern, eastern and central Australia. Warmer than average days and nights are predicted for most of the mainland, except parts of the west and southeast. The only exception really is southern Tasmania, which can expect a wetter than usual summer, which probably will be of interest to the yachts people. But apart from that, like, for example, in Queensland, three-quarters of the state is drought declared already, and Jeff Saberg from the Weather Bureau says we mightn't get much of a wet season.
There's no end in sight for the dry, hot conditions is basically the summary, but it's at least a 70% chance of below-average rainfall and corresponding above max and min temperatures. In other words, we're still 70% chance we're going to continue the dry and a 70% chance we're going to have these warm days and nights in the summer period.
And the effects of the last few months of dry weather and frosts have really started to play out now with the national wheat harvest.
Yes, we've expected a lower wheat harvest than last year, and we're certainly going to get it. And it's a combination of things. Apart from the below-average rainfall, there's also been heat waves, there's also been frost. And so it's a bit patchy all around the country. The Australian Export Grains Innovation Centre expects the average wheat yield to be down 18% on last year, and the national crop of about 22.7 million tonnes will compare to 27 million last year. The centre's David Stevens says it's a pity because there was a good start to the season back in autumn.
The fact that we had such an excellent early start meant that we thought, well, this could be one of those years where we really get a very large national crop. But with that dry finish, the expectations have really dropped off, and it's been a bit disappointing. But there are areas like southern Western Australia where they're looking at bumper crops.
Now, the Federal Trade Minister, Andrew Robb, has been widely lauded for his ability to secure free trade deals with a number of countries in quite short succession. But there is a bit of concern about where we're looking to next.
Yes, no sooner had the government said it was agreeing on a deal with China than it said its next aim was India. And the government wants an Indian free trade deal finalised by the end of next year. Farmers aren't so sure. The National Farmers Federation says India should not be made a priority over Indonesia, which is already Australia's third agriculture market. NFF Chief Executive Simon Talbot says a free trade deal with Indonesia would give farmers far more export opportunities than India.
From my dealings in India, it's going to be a 10-year deal in the sense that there are a lot of barriers, both internal barriers but also high tariffs that need to be removed. We've had a couple of goes at getting sheep meat and beef and dairy into that market with limited success. But please don't drop the ball on Indonesia. That is for a whole variety of fronts, socio-political and economic.
Now, back in May when we had the federal budget, we reported that cuts would be coming to the research agency, the CSIRO, but the detail and the extent of those cuts is now emerging.
Yes, the CSIRO Staff Association says cuts at the organisation are going to be worse than forecast. The government cut $111 million over 2 years from the CSIRO budget on top of the much vaunted efficiency dividend. Well, the union says that's now equating to about 20% of the workforce. 878 jobs will have to go now on top of 500 last year. Sydney University's Dean of Agriculture, Professor Mark Adams, says changes are going to have to be made to make sure there's enough money and staff for proper agricultural research. He says the government the CSIRO and industry need to work smarter to bring research centres together. And one example would be the Sydney University's own wheat centre at Narrabri.
Curiously, 10 kilometres down the road is a state government / CSIRO establishment that is focused mainly on cotton research, whereas we've been mostly focused on wheat research. Bringing those two together is the sort of thinking that we need in regional Australia.
Now, the Prime Minister in recent weeks has championed coal and its future. He's not the only parliamentarian doing that.
Well, Liberal Democrat Senator David Lionhelm made a speech in the Senate in praise of coal and dumped a big one on the anti-coal activists, saying they had lost the plot. He said that the industry employed 55,000 people in Australia, was vital to the future of the world, and even though energy markets were changing, developing countries would use coal for decades to come. Senator Lionhelm says those people who want coal mining stopped are an economically illiterate minority.
They're quite serious about closing down our second biggest export industry. It's bizarre. They think that for some reason or other they're going to do somebody some good somewhere. My argument is that they will do hundreds of millions of very, very poor people around the world a very great disservice, and they'll also wreck Australia's economy.
An interesting take on the development of a mine in South Australia from the Greens.
Well, the Greens are supporting a mine. Now, I know that...
I did, my jaw slightly dropped when I read this one.
Yes, it's quite unusual, actually. They say it shows mining does not have to be controversial. The mining in question is on the Lower Eyre Peninsula. In 1993, a long-running graphite mine was closed down, and it's going to be reopened by Valence Industries. The Yuli mine now hopes to produce 30,000 tonnes of graphite a year. It's a highly sought-after product and is used in a lot of new technology. And SA Greens leader Mark Parnell says the Greens won't fight this. He says it looks like a project that warrants support.
The Greens have never been anti-mining. What we want is the right project in the right location. Certainly this project looks to be very different from some of the controversial copper and iron ore projects on Eyre Peninsula and York Peninsula. It looks to be ticking all the boxes so far, and we look forward to seeing the final environmental assessment as well.
We've spoken a little about concerns in the Northern Territory and Queensland about the cucumber green mottle mosaic virus, a pretty nasty disease that affects melons and other veggies. But there's really national concern about this now.
Well, the Australian Melon Association has cancelled its 2015 annual conference. I don't know whether you were planning to attend that, whether they sent you a ticket or not. But it was going to be held in March in Griffith in southern New South Wales, where they grow quite a lot of cucurbits, like melons and cucumbers and so on. They're going to postpone that for another year till 2016 because they are worried that people from other states might bring in some traces of this disease from up north to either the conference or the associated field days around that conference. The Melon Association's Mark Daunt says the decision will limit the chance of the virus spreading through plant material, farm machinery or through humans.
I personally don't think that it would, but we can't rule it out. So, I mean, we just don't want to take any chances. The growers in New South Wales, some growers down there quite anxious about, obviously, fellow growers from around the country coming into their growing region.
Now, levies are usually looked at very sceptically by most, especially new ones, but banana growers are pretty happy about one in their industry.
Well, the nation's banana growers have agreed on a new levy to fund an eradication program underway already in the Northern Territory for the disease banana freckle, and they're going to introduce this levy under a new provisions called the Emergency Plant Pest Response Deed, which allows industries to fund their own, to raise extra funds in order to counter disease. They've had a record year for banana production, so Banana Growers Council President Doug Phillips says getting rid of banana freckle is really a very big challenge for the industry.
You know, the response plan is in place now, but it's certainly not a case of set and forget. There'll be a lot of work for us to do on freckle, and then associated with that is, you know, we're going to have to get our positive levy in place so that we can repay the federal government the debt that we're currently incurring as a part of that response plan.
They may look cute, but they're a complete pest, the agile wallaby.
Yes, in the Northern Territory, they did a study through Charles Darwin University and found there were up to 700 wallabies per square kilometre in some areas. And these wallabies are damaging the environment, also eating a lot of the pasture and costing the cattle industry millions of dollars. So they want to do something about it. Stage two of the study is to look at ways to reduce the wallaby numbers. One way, of course, would be to shoot them, but farmer Mel Green is one of those who hopes a solution other than culling can be found.
It's obvious to me that the water is the major problem. If we can design water outlets for that suit the cattle and don't suit the wallabies, we'd basically eliminate the problem. And the other thing would be to harvest it.
Harvest the wallabies?
Harvest the wallabies, yeah, absolutely. But whether it's economical or not, I don't know.
Now, it's not the obvious thing that springs to mind when you think about farm exports, but sheep embryos are big business for one farmer anyway.
This is a very interesting story. A southeast Queensland sheep farmer, Carolyn Davidson from Bow Desert, has been producing sheep embryos for export to the Middle East, and not just any sheep embryos. She's been raising a Wassi sheep. Now, this is a breed native to the Arabian Peninsula, and was once the mainstay of Bedouin herds.
But it's highly productive too, apparently, with its milk.
Yes, and they use them for milk, they use them for meat, and sometimes for wool as well. And the Emirate of Qatar wants to rebuild its Awassi herd. So she's been raising these sheep embryos and has produced 4,000 of them so far. She says they were grown out in Australia from the embryos and then sent to Qatar.
Every 6 weeks we had to prepare the ewes, then AI them. A week later we'd have to flush the eggs out of them, or the embryos. After they were graded, they'd go into nitrogen, and then they'd hop on a plane and go off to different parts of Australia to be put into merino sheep the following day.
Now, Jackie Lambie has created all sorts of headlines in the last fortnight or so, but she's also creating some in terms of agriculture.
Well, it's Victorian election day today, and the new premier, whoever that may be, will have a lot of challenges. One of them will be facing Jackie Lambie, because she's had a meeting with Poppy Growers Tasmania and the Federal Assistant Health Minister Fiona Nash to lobby against expansion of the poppy industry, the opium poppy industry, outside Tasmania. Victoria has a fledgling poppy industry and wants to expand. But Senator Lambie says she's got a strong message for the next Premier of Victoria.
There is no reason for it to go out of Tasmania. I'm going to fight like hell for this. As soon as I know who's elected after the Victorian election, I'll be straight down there to talk to the Premier, whether that's Liberal or Labor, and I'll be speaking to them straight away and letting them know my stance on that. Whatever I can do up here in the Senate, that it remains in Tasmania, I'll be pushing that as hard as possible. It's ours, it is our birthright, and it is staying there and nobody else is getting it.
So for our Tasmanian listeners, it's good to know that growing opium poppies is your birthright.
That's certainly a new take on it. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
And you can find all those stories online at abc.net.au/rural. And, of course, you'll get an update as well once we know some of those initial results of the Victorian state election.